ready, set, go! And it's time again for the one, the only Cannonball Run! Live from one side of the States to the other, finishing in New York. Here we go! We're going to celebrate it tonight on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the big great action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the lows of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
G'day, my name is Gal. Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast, episode number 64. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina here in the very rainy today, Gold Coast of Australia. Celebrating tonight one of the old classics when it comes to comedy, action, and Burt Reynolds. That's, of course, the Cannonball Run. Now, as an Aussie, I don't know too much about the history of the Cannonball Run until I've done the research on this very show. So we got quite a bit of that today. I'm going to talk about, obviously, the movie. Always going to talk about a little bit of news and some of the stuff I've been re-watching, some recent buys that I've found. That is, of course, some great DVDs, some classic 1980s TV shows, which we're going to review on here because, guess what, they're full of action and they have mullets as well. And we're also going to be going through, obviously, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be covering some heavy martial arts stuff. I'm going to give you a bit of a heads up on what's coming. And a special anime adaptation that was definitely one of the highlights of the mid-90s and just a great anime itself. And that's, of course, The Crying Freeman. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Bit of a preview of it and much more all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. But here is how you can find us, the Lethal Mullet Podcast, on Phantom Podcast Network and subscribe to the show.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name's Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Phantom Podcast Network's master channel at fbnet.podbean.com or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, folks, here's the news straight from the reports itself. No, here's the news in all circles of Lethal Mullet. We always look for great 1980s content, and one of those is the first season of Miami Vice. That's for the sunny places of Miami, obviously, being this backdrop for one of the most compelling 1980s cop dramas, action series out there. Of course, Miami Vice was pretty much the start of what got the one, the only Don Johnson on the map. And it's a great series. We've got some starts to careers in this, particularly in the pilot episode, which I thoroughly enjoyed renewing my sort of love of by rewatching. And now, I don't have a big remastered version of this. This is just something I found in a video shop for $9.95, the box set. I do have a basically like a greatest hits of the series as well that I've had for a little while. But Don Johnson in this really flies, along with, obviously, as he's playing Detective James Crockett in this, along with Philip Michael Thomas, who arguably even better as Ricardo Tubbs. And particularly that first episode, because you don't know what to make of Tubbs. When he comes into it, you know, obviously from New York, down to the sleepy but amazing holiday area of, obviously, Miami. It really becomes a part of, obviously, this great series. We obviously have Eddie James Olmos in this, playing Martin Castillo, the lieutenant in the series. You've also got John Deal, who's just pops up in everything. He's an amazing character actor, obviously. Stargate, one of the big ones he did. Michael Talbot, you've got also Martin Ferraro, you've got Julio Oscar Machoso, and he plays Lester in this, and he's great. He turns up in so much stuff these days. Planet Terror, the Zorro films, he was in Jurassic Park 3, he was in Blue Streak, which we're going to cover here very, very soon. Plays a police officer in that, Detective Diaz. Great actor, always likable on there too. Obviously, too, some great actors which would come up in further things. Bruce Willis is in the first couple of episodes of Miami Vice as a gun runner. Again, you can see the greatness starting to come through. Some really great foundations of what will become great roles down the line. We've got Ned Eisenberg, which you'll see later, and obviously another Bruce Willis film, Last Man Standing as well. And we also have, look, the list goes on, folks. Great series, and I am going to cover it very soon on the show, because I do have a love for it. The Cars, you name it. I mean, it's really one of those classic shows that's all about style as well, and the music too. Lots of great covers, a little bit like Knight Rider. They covered a lot of great music too. Also, we've got picked up Diamond Dogs from back in, I think it was 2008 or 9. Dolph Lundgren did this great, different sort of a film for him. He's done all sorts of films over the years, but this one kind of has a little bit of a, I think, an Uncommon Valor / Raiders of the Lost Ark feel to it, which we'll cover very soon. So I'm good to redo a bit of a watch on that. I haven't seen that in about probably close to 10 years. Now, on the books front, we're going through some great anime right now and also some great science fiction. And this may not be right up in the action areas, but it's certainly 1980s. That is, of course, Galactic Patrol and the Lensman series, so Grey Lensman and Second Lensman. Now, this is, of course, Doc E. Smith, who basically was the front runner for a lot of influences when it came to Green Lantern, Babylon 5, Star Wars, definitely Star Wars, and Dune as well. All the stuff that you see in Dune, Star Wars, Green Lantern, all these great series come from their love of Lensman series. But what's great about it, in the 1980s, we got a Japanese anime adaptation of the series, and it was later dubbed by Harmony Gold. And if you're a fan of Robotech in particular, pretty much three quarters of the voice cast are on that. You know, Greg Snegov's on there, Michael McConaughey. You've also got the actress that played Lisa Hayes is on there as well. Just pretty much most of the voice cast for Macross and Southern Cross are on there too. Stephen Kramer's on there as well. So that's Angelo Dante, of course, Veritech Hovertech pilot. So if you like that, you're going to really get a kick out of it. And there's some really interesting animation in this one. It was not easily available. It's mainly on Laserdisc and VHS. Never really got a DVD adaptation or basically a version of it. So you have to really look out for it. There is quite a bit of material of it on YouTube and some great advertising of the merchandise. So out of that series, it was a series plus the movie. The movie's probably better than the series, actually. Really, really good. The look of the ships in particular is very Star Wars. These basically are space cops, if you like. The lens is a special disc that's basically grown into their hand. Gives them a lot of the powers that you see in the Jedi have, and some of the lantern stuff, imagination, how they're able to conjure things, a little bit of magic involved in some ways. It's really an interesting sort of front runner to what we'll see later on. Through the people that were influenced with. And Frank Herbert as well, due to obviously the Bene Gesserit in this, is a huge part of the Lensman, where it is about breeding programs, breeding certain special abilities and getting those through to the heroes like Kimball Kennison in this, or Kim Kennison. So really interesting. We'll cover the actual Lensman adaptation a little bit later on this. show and definitely go into why it's such a, I think, a crucial, probably not a great adaptation of the novels, which I'm reading right now. I haven't read them in years. There's a nice new edition out, actually, you can get through Amazon and through local book dealers, which is basically a sci-fi masterpiece novel series. So you can go and check that out. Now, news for the show itself, covering after this episode, coming out in episode number 65, is The Crying Freeman. This is the second of our Mark Dacascos specials, and this is the one where he met his wife on this one too, so I'm sure it's very special to Mark. And obviously the previous episode we did is, of course, Only the Strong, going through obviously the amazing artistry of the martial art and way of life of Capoeira. It's great to see that I tagged Mark in the actual post I put out to celebrate the upcoming show, and he's already liked it. So I'm hoping you do check it out, Mark, and that you enjoy it, because again, we're influenced by what you gave us, this amazing film, and it's one that's influenced a lot of people to get fit, for starters, which is a great thing. But also to celebrate this amazing piece of Brazilian and African culture. And it really is not just music, it's not just exercise, it's not just martial arts and self-defense, it's everything. It's a way of life, it's a way of family. And I think that's very, very important. So we're going to be covering this Crying Freeman, which is from an amazing series of manga and also anime, which I had on VHS for years. The actual VHS anime adaptation of the manga was brilliant. So if you haven't seen that, you need to see it, definitely. But the adaptation was done by Christoph Gans, and obviously Christoph became very good friends with Mark and later did The Brotherhood of the Wolf, which we will be doing on this show. In French, it's better known as Le Pacte des Loups, and is, of course, about the Beast of Gévaudan. And that was a myth for years, obviously, what this was really about. But when it comes down to it, it is actually the myth that started the story of the werewolf. So it has a very interesting history, so we'll be going through that. In amongst those episodes, we are going to do a special on Shokusugi. Massive fan of Shokusugi. Again, another influence in my martial arts journey. I think if you grew up in the 1980s, you couldn't have not seen Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, or any of the amazing ninja films. So we're going to be celebrating him on one episode, looking at all of his work and his current endeavor, doing an amazing series of books, which are very much like a martial arts and definitely a ninja journey, with, of course, the Da Vinci Code style of mystery and stuff like that too. It really is. It's an interesting journey. A very well-illustrated book as well. It's not just your regular pulp novel. This is one that's got a little bit more to it. It certainly has a lot of mythology in there too, which I really can't wait to get into. So without further ado, folks, we're going to get into the Cannonball Run. We're going to talk about a little bit of the history of the movie, and we're going to tell you about, guess what? The actual Cannonball Run itself is real. Alrighty, mate, time to go down to the pub for a pint, chat, action movies and more, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Alright, Cannonball Run is a 1981 action comedy film, and it was directed by the director of Smokey and the Bandit, and of course, Megaforce. So I know Kevin and Kyle are going to love this one, because it really is a cousin, a distant cousin to that. And of course, produced by Hong Kong's Golden Harvest Films. So this is obviously the next in the production line after Megaforce. And this is the successful one. Because unfortunately, Megaforce didn't quite make the hit. It features an absolutely stunning cast. Obviously has Burt Reynolds, Roger Moore, Dom DeLuise, Farrah Fawcett, and Jackie Chan. And a host of others. We're going to get right into it. Yes, even Klinger from MASH. And this is basically based on the 1979 cross-country outlaw road race, beginning in Connecticut and ending in California. So I think actually that starts all over the place, really, from what I gather. Again, I'm not from the US, so I don't know all the states and where things are. So it'll be a learning experience tonight for me too, folks. It is one of the biggest and most successful films at the box office for, of course, the one, the only, 1981. Good year. Obviously, it had a sequel, Cannonball Run 2, and another called Speed Zone in 89. And the 1984 sequel, the final appearance of Dean Martin. as an actor too. Again, this is the basis of some video games, one of those being Need for Speed, The Run. And again, I'm pretty sure you're going to find a lot of films were heavily influenced by this. This is one of those films where you just basically have an amazing array of cast, great cars, some really interesting characters, and there's not a lot of plot. It's literally little plot here and there of each getting to each point, having little run-in with each other as they go through, and some interesting little bits of comedy in the way. Directed by, obviously, Hal Needham, experienced stuntman, very good friend, of course, of Burt Reynolds, stunt double as well, all that sort of thing. Produced by Albert S. Ruddy and written by Brock Yates, which we're going to get into right now. So who is Brock Yates? Well, get this, folks. This is who he is. All right, so who is Brock Yates? Born in October 21, 1933. He was an American TV journalist, screenwriter, and author. He was also the executive editor of Car and Driver, which is basically a massive American automotive magazine. He's also a pit reporter for the CBS NASCAR coverage through, obviously, the 80s and stuff like that too, including the Daytona 500. So he's a huge automotive genius, this guy was at the time too. Obviously, you know, very much into the sport itself, and somebody who would come to known as the father of one of the greatest cross-country races out there. He is also the one that really is the inspiration for what would become the Cannonball Run. He was inspired himself by Erwin G. Cannonball Baker, who had basically set a number of records coast to coast, and he initiated the Cannonball Baker Sea to Shining Sea Memorial Trophy Dash. It was a cross-country road race, a protest itself against the loss of freedom in America and speed limits everywhere. I think we can all attest to speed limits across the road, although it's probably a good reason to have speed limits, particularly in Australia, you know. And roads are different everywhere. But this is the reason he was doing it. The first run itself was basically completed as a recon by Brock, and he was going coast to coast in a full-size Dodge van. So I'd say the size is a little bit bigger than a Tarago. The Dodge van itself, obviously, is the size of an ambulance or a paramedics van, if you like. And, of course, it would be the inspiration which would start this whole huge race itself too.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
All right, the film came out, obviously, the height of Burt Reynolds' fame. Starring alongside him is Roger Moore at the height of his, well, maybe the latter half of his height as James Bond in Celebrity. Farrah Fawcett, Dom DeLuise, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. from the Brat Pack. We've also got Adrienne Barbeau at the time, Mrs. John Carpenter. Really good in this, actually. Tara Buckman, Jamie Farr. That's, of course, Corporal Klinger from MASH, Terry Bradshaw, Mel Tillis, Jackie Chan, and Michael Hui. Of course, this was one of two films from Golden Harvest that Jackie was doing at the time to try and break it into the American market. And he's quite good at this. And this is a really, really good action scene, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Again, didn't quite hit the mark and didn't quite, with the other actors, that is, really get him noticed, I think, when it came to Celebrity in the States. And they didn't quite get the Jackie Chan humor the way that other countries had already. So, again, it was a little bit too early for him. At the same time, he was doing films like The Big Brawl as well. And, obviously, some Battle Creek Brawl, it's called, in some countries as well. Music by Al Capps, cinematography by Michael Butler, and edited by Don Camburn and William D. Gordine. Production company, obviously Golden Harvest, but this was distributed through 20th Century Fox, a pretty big company to put it through in the States. Came out June 19, 1981, and has a running time of only 95 minutes. It actually feels like a two-hour movie when you watch it, but it goes at a quiet, brisk pace. Obviously, the budget on this one, you're not going to believe, was only about $16 million to $18 million, approximately. But the box office was 10 times that amount. If it was at $16 million budget, the US box office alone was $160 million. So you can see just how successful this movie was. And I think a lot of it was the simple great truth of this is that it's an ensemble piece, and that ensemble piece brought in a multitude of demographics when it came to its audience, and I think that's why it did so damn well. Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise as racer J.J. McClure and his buddy mechanic Victor Prinzi, a.k.a. Captain Chaos. And some really great scenes those two had. And they really feed off each other. Obviously, they both worked with Hal Needham on Smokey and the Bandit 1. And then, obviously, with Dom DeLuise with number 2, Smokey and the Bandit Part 2. I don't think they came into the third one. I think that was the offsider to him from the first one. Roger Moore in this plays Seymour Goldfarb Jr. And basically it's a parody of James Bond, of his own self. He has an Aston Martin DB5 in this one. So it's kind of a bit of a piss take at James Bond, but also a bit of a throw in the face to Sean Connery's car. You know, Sean Connery had the DB5, but Roger always had different cars. You know, he had the Lotus and other different cars as well. And actually, the registration plate in it, 6633PP, is the same one used in one of the Bond films, Goldfinger and Thunderball. So it is a bit of a piss take at the bigger Bond movies from the 60s. And although, you know, Moore never actually touched an Aston Martin all the time he was James Bond. We didn't get another Aston Martin until Timothy Dalton with his first film. Which we got to, you know, obviously he came in after A View to a Kill with the Living Daylights. And that car's just an absolute beast. The Aston Martin that he had in that one was a real big V8 gas guzzler. It was almost like the MFP Interceptor, but for Britain. So it's interesting. Molly Picon plays his mother in it, and several women ride with Seymour, including model Lewis Hamilton and Lois Arino as well. Farrah Fawcett plays the photographer Pamela Glover. And, of course, JJ just keeps calling her beauty throughout it. So they have a bit of love interest for him. Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. back together. And they play race car driver Jamie Blake and the scam artist Morris Fenderbaum. Now, what's interesting about these two, just, you know, they were born to be together in movies. They feed off each other when it comes to not only the acting itself, but the dialogue just really fits with what they're doing as well. And Blake's car, a Ferrari 308 GTS, is the exact same model as, of course, Magnum PIs. I thought maybe they've just done that to get people's interest, maybe, on who knows. But it's a bloody nice car, and still to this day looks amazing. And you know that it is the one, the only Magnum that has that bloody car. You know, fire engine red always looks good. We also have George Firth as Arthur J. Foyt, the main antagonist of the movie. Obviously, George Firth you may know from another movie that we just talked about a couple episodes ago. I'll let you guess that one. And, of course, he's trying to stop the race throughout the movie. But, again, he's really good with comic timing, and he plays it so straight. It's kind of like Leslie Nielsen does in comedies, you know. Plays it so damn straight that the comedy just rolls out. Jackie Chan and Michael Hui are the drivers of the Subaru GL. And, of course, it is maxed out with gadgets. This is a car that, you know, just seems to be amazing all the way through. Obviously, it's Japan's entry into the race. But an interesting bit of trivia here is that the credits completely get it right. Completely get it wrong. There you go. I almost got it wrong myself. Saying that They credit the two as Mitsubishi drivers when it's actually a Subaru GL. If you remember the Subarus from the 1980s, you know the shape straight away. It's got that specific shape and cut to it, so you know it's done at Mitsubishi. Even though years later, on a couple other films, obviously Jackie had, I think, done a deals to advertise for Mitsubishi. He put them in, can't remember what movie it was. It wasn't Project A, but one of those ones at the time. Jamie Farr plays Sheikh Abdul Ben Falafel, a wealthy Arabian in this, and he's basically, you know, he's plays it again so straight, just like Klinger. You know, when he's playing those roles, the comedy just comes naturally. Bianca Jagger makes a cameo as his sister, and he's got a Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow. And he's only, you know, the car itself is just such a beautiful car, even at the time. It's a classic car. And he's the only character that's in all three of the Cannonball films. We've got Mel Tillis and Terry Bradshaw as Mel and Terry. And, of course, they're in the NASCAR Chevrolet Malibu Grand National. Basically, it's just a huge, massive beast. And again, one that, you know, is a classic American muscle car, I suppose you could say. Adrienne Barbeau and Tara Buchman, they play Marcy Thatcher and Jill Rivers. And, of course, they've got that amazing spandex outfits, and they are in the Lamborghini Countach. And, of course, that's that. You see the car at the start of the show. We see it pursued by the patrol car, and it's just an amazing, you know, thing to see on screen. It's just a fast, beasty car. And you've got two beautiful women driving that car. Now, on the top of that, we also have some fun cameos. Peter Fonda plays a cameo role and is actually a reference to his character from The Wild Angels. And obviously, the motorcycle gang is part of that in the chase. And it's an excuse, obviously, for some amazing artistry. When it comes to Jackie Chan, and of course, we see his acrobatic and comedic martial arts skills to the max there. There's some amazing stuff in that, some of those scenes too. You also have Hal Needham appearing in uncredited as the ambulance EMT in it as well too. The veteran Daytona 500 commentator Ken Squire is also in it as the California Highway Patrolman. June Foray, a veteran voice actor, also dubbed the dialogue of several of the women who scored the Goldfarb in the race. And uncredited performance as well. So, star-studded folks, when it comes to the cast, it's amazing. And let's get into the plot. So, it's a very, very simple plot, folks. If you don't know it by now, after what we've talked about, obviously it's pretty straight up. The race teams gather in Connecticut and start the cross-country car race. They've got to start one at a time as they sign in for the race itself. And basically the teams have to drive up to the starter standards, punch that card in, and off they go. Now, there's a bunch of different teams. We'll go through some of those. Obviously, JJ McClure, who's Burt Reynolds, and Victor Prinzi, DeLuise, have the souped-up Dodge Tradesman ambulance. Obviously, this is the one that Brock Yates and Hal Needham used for the actual race in 1979. You've also got Scotch Swilling, Jamie Blake, Dean Martin, and obviously Morris Vanderborn, Sammy Davis Jr., dressed as Catholic priests in the Magnum car, taking off as well. You've also got, and this is obviously, this is actually based on a real bunch that were taking off. They're called the Flying Fathers from the 1972 race, who drove a Mercedes 280 SEL. And basically took part in the real actual events itself too. We have Michael Hui and Jackie Chan in the high-tech souped-up turbo-driven Subaru four-wheel drive hatchback. It's got this massive booster on the back of it too, so it's kind of, yeah, tongue-in-cheek sort of go at things too. We've got the good old boys, Terry Bradshaw and Mel Tillis, in the Donnie Allison Highwine Tropic-sponsored NASCAR, and of course the rest, as we said too. So what happens is it splits up through the race, and we get to see the hijinks that each of them are going to be taking place in each. And obviously there's a lot of comedy involved in that too. Jamie Farr really playing it up as usual as well. And of course we get to see Captain Chaos. He turns into his alter ego. We're always going to talk about Dom DeLuise. And a very spooky Dr. Van Helsing. Jack Elam, who is in it, and he's got this massive hypodermic needle in the ambulance to keep Glover quiet in the actual ambulance over the race itself too, which is a lot of fun. Obviously, too, there's a lot of times where they're, like the real race itself, evading the police, and we get to see quite a bit of that in the show itself. One of the great things about this, we get to see Seymour Goldfarb. That's Roger Moore. And he's evading the police using James Bond-style gadgets. And, of course, it's all, again, a piss take of what you've seen in mainly the Connery films. I often wonder whether getting into this one was his way of having a bit of a stab at his best mate, Sean Connery, as well. But the primary antagonists and rivalries between, obviously, the Ferrari and the ambulance. So obviously the two fathers, and of course Dom DeLuise, and of course Burt Reynolds as well too. And it really is a play up of those two. And they stir each other up, try to obviously prank each other, and also try and hinder each other's performance in the race itself too. Again, it comes together with one very big slapstick ending, and it gets a solid 4.5 out of 5 on the Hell and Back scale. Yep, folks, this is actually one of my favourites from back in the early 1980s. Hell Needham classic. It might even be better than Megaforce. Did I say that? Oh my God. Kevin and Kyle are going to kill us with this one, but I will say it. It's better than Megaforce. Made more money than Megaforce. All right, time to head into some of the trivia. Did you know the movie was originally planned as an action movie starring Steve McQueen? But after McQueen's death, the lead went to, obviously, Burt Reynolds, and it went to more of a parody and comedy. Jackie Chan made one of his first US movie appearances here, inspired by Hal Needham's notion of including, obviously, bloopers, comedic stuff in the closing credits. Chan began a tradition in every movie plus this one, of course, of adding bloopers towards the end of it too. The ambulance used in the movie is the actual one that Hal Needham and Brock Yates used, souped up Cannonball Run that they did. Of course, you know, it's a bit of history when it's the real actual one. Obviously, Jackie Chan, who played a small role in this, was very upset when he learned his character was Japanese, since he is Chinese. Burt Reynolds also became the highest actor paid actor cinema history at this point, getting $5 million for only a month's work in this one too. The producers asked the governor of Georgia if the crew could shut down the center of small town so that a plane could land in the middle of it. The police blocked off the section. The plane was able to land, and a barrier can be seen in the background where you can actually see all the traffic blocked off altogether. To get actual material for this film, Brock Yates ran the final Cannonball Run in 79. Obviously, it cost him his editorial position on Car and Driver magazine, but now has been reinstated. The bulk of the stars in the movie only worked for 2 or 3 days. Again, this is one of the great things about ensemble work. You can actually get actors to come in and do things in between their other commitments and really get it started, get it going. The short sequence at the beginning of the movie has two animated cars wrecking the 20th Century Fox logo, which is created by Hal Needham. Amazing. Obviously, too, some of the funny stuff we get, the first highway patrol officer that pulls over Adrian Barbeau and Tara Buckman was Burt Reynolds' actual stand-in. And you can actually see the resemblance between the two as well. Don Rickles was originally cast as Fenderbaum before the part went to Sammy Davis Jr. And the film only took 36 days to film. Amazing. Now, the film itself also has some sequels, which we are going to be covering in later months. Actually, because I'm actually waiting on them to arrive. Cannonball Run 2, which came out in 1984. And, of course, Cannonball Fever. Looking at some of the cast, obviously, the second one we have... J.J. McClure and Victor Prison coming back. That's, of course, Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise. Dean Martin returned and Sammy Davis Jr. as well. Jamie Farr came back as he was in each one of them. Mary Lou Henner was in it. Telly Savalas, Shirley MacLaine, Susan Anton, Catherine Bach, Foster Brooks, and Jackie Chan came back as well. Tony Danza was in it with Tim Conway as well. And, of course, the amazing Richard Kiel was in this one too. And, of course, Speed Zone, better known as Cannonball Fever, out here in Australia. 1989 it came out, and it had Peter Boyle, Donna Dixon, John Candy, Matt Frewer, and, of course, Joe Flaherty, Tim Matheson, Melody Anderson from, of course, the one the only, Flash Gordon. It also had Tom Smothers, Don Lake, John Schneider, and Jamie Fireback, Lee Van Cleef, Harvey Ackett, and Eugene Levy. That one I think I've only ever seen once, but we will cover it here as well too. But what are your thoughts on the Cannonball Run? Is it something amazing? If you haven't seen some of the documentaries on YouTube, you should. There's some great stuff on about how the race has been run. And obviously, since the 70s, they've had different incarnations of that still. I'm just so amazed as an Australian myself, seeing this little slice of United States history. Automotive history, but I tell you what, it's very interesting nonetheless. So I hope you've enjoyed our little dive into the Cannonball Run, and stay with us for the next couple episodes as we will get back to it, probably in late September with Cannonball Run 2.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to the Fandom Podcast Network and all of the other awesome shows we have to offer. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture news podcast. Blood Kings, our Highlander podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite pop culture topics. End Zone, the NFL podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s and 90s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And our newest show, Making Treks, a new Star Trek podcast with a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.